It's the Growler with BD and Jay. Here to analyze for you today. From Growler Bad to Jay's Got Stats. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Growler Podcast.
There it is. All right. Welcome into the latest edition of the Growler. It's PD and Jay, Paul Junior, Jr. of The Athletic, Jay Morrison, Pro Football Network, here with you on a Wednesday. We're just 2 weeks away, Jay.
Yes.
From it finally happening mercifully. I think we've reached mercifully happening. We're almost there. We're getting there.
Yeah, I don't count down to the start of the draft. I count down. We are one day closer to the best beer of the year, Saturday night after the draft ends.
Yeah, that's been altered to best drink of the year because it's gotten harder.
You're right.
It used to be best beer, and then it became like best hard liquor, basically. Like, it was just necessary. The bourbon, it's usually one of the few times where I'm pretty like, stout, like it's got to be top shelf. We're going top shelf here on this one. That Saturday night, you're right. I cannot wait to have it and raise a glass, you and I, to cheers this thing being over. But that's because there's a lot of work going into it for a reason. But nobody, and I mean nobody, puts in more work to this thing than Dane Brugler. And the Beast is out. If you have a athletic subscription, you have access to it. If you don't have an athletic subscription, can't tell you a better reason to get one than this. I mean, this alone is the most exhaustive draft guide that you will see, no matter who you want to look at, rankings, background, you know, childbirth order, you name the detail. He has it all in there. It is incredible. It's out today. Make sure you go and get the Beast from Dane Brugler, the ultimate draft guide. Jay, have you already dove in today?
Yes, I have. I actually, you know, I woke up in the middle of the night, as I'm wont to do these days. It was about 4:35. Went to the bathroom and then checked The Athletic to see if I knew it was coming out today. But it's like, when? When are they going to? I think it was 7 a.m. when they dropped it. But I'm curious, you know, what does Dane's to-do list look like today? Does he just kick back and take a day completely off and do nothing, do something that he hasn't been able to do for a while? Or is he grinding 2025 film right now and just flip, like painting the Golden Gate Bridge? Once you finish it, you go back and you start again. It's a never-ending process.
Well, I can tell you part of what he's doing, and that is sorting through all of his television and radio requests, yeah, including mine, which, you know, we people that listen know we talk to Dane every year, and so we'll have him on between now and the draft, talk a little bit more about this. But we're going to this is going to be about pass catchers. This is going to be about the receivers and tight ends in this draft and the Bengals strategy, what's in front of them, some of their current setup, and really a lot of things about, because this is just so different than we saw last year. There's so many guys. We've talked about this a lot, but we really want to kind of pinpoint some of the details here that are going to end up mattering and where this thing is sitting at. So we're going to use that for this show. Next week, we'll get into trenches, okay? We'll talk more about these offensive linemen. We'll talk more about Byron Murphy and the other defensive tackles and all of that stuff as we get closer. But this is kind of the other big thing that we're looking at how they're going to approach, and it's fun this year. Honestly, like, it's just fun. There's so many fun prospects to watch and think about what you can do next. So there's a lot to get to there. Hayden Winks from Underdog Fantasy. If you don't know them, Josh Norris, Hayden Winks, they are incredible in breaking down all of the receiver prospects. Their YouTube page is just crushing right now. They have these awesome 10 to 15 minute videos on every prospect, really in-depth stuff, a good mixture of tape and advanced analytics and just eyeball stuff. So love them. I've always loved what they've done. First time we've had Hayden on the show. Hayden's going to come in here and talk a lot about the receivers that they have gone through. Friend of the program, Nate Tice, also going to be on this show. You're going to hear from him talking about Brock Bowers specifically and a little bit more on the receivers. Also, you'll hear from him next week. If you're a YouTube person, congratulations. Hope you follow on YouTube, hit the subscribe button, all that stuff. Do all the bell ringing and then saying nice things if you can. And on top of that, those full interviews are going to be posted on our YouTube page. So you can go and watch those there and get more of those. But for what we're doing, you're going to get Nate, and we'll have Nate giving all the stuff for offensive line next week, because he's great on that stuff too. So we've got all that coming your way. But those guys on this show, we're packed is what I'm saying. I think what we've established 5 minutes in is that we're packed.
Yes. Plenty to get to. And just the wide receivers alone. This is a lot of talk about the offensive tackle class being one of the best ever, but this wide receiver class is just, if you want a receiver in the first three rounds and you don't get one, there's no excuses. If you need a receiver in the first three rounds and you don't get one, there's no excuses.
Will this end up being like last year's tight end group where they end up hearing about how never matched up? I don't think so. I don't think it's possible for this to quite never match up, but let's dive. Let's start going in here. To start, I guess we have to go back to the situation where every receiver conversation with the Bengals starts right now, and that's with T. Higgins. Josh Allen, edge rusher from Jacksonville, signed a contract extension this morning. And 5 years, $150 million, $88 million guaranteed. Spit out your coffee stuff. Congrats to him. That is now 7 of the 9 franchise tagged players have received extensions. The other two are T. Higgins and Antoine Winfield. Winfield and the Bucks, it's thought of, are going to get it done. They just haven't gotten it done yet. There's a really, really good chance it's 8-1. What happens when a vote is 8-1? We know who the and one is. Let's go talk to Mike Proud, right? An owner's meetings tradition, but in this time, a franchise tag tradition now. And I tweeted briefly about this, and I gotta remember, you just can't. It's tweet and perish at this point, like about T. Higgins, because there's no way to give proper context. You got to do something like, oh, I don't know, write a 4-part series about it to properly give context anytime you mention it, because there is so much to it. But you have to understand T. Higgins' frustration here.
Yeah.
He looks at these numbers, which includes Michael Pittman, at 3 years, $70 million and a bunch guaranteed. And all these guys who were given franchise tags, it has to be like, I mean, shouldn't I be in this group? Shouldn't I be part of this group of all these people that are getting these huge guarantees, 40, 50, 60, 88 million, whatever it is? Shouldn't that be me? But it's not. It's not. And I understand that frustration. I'm not saying it's right or wrong from a team perspective. I'm not getting into that. You understand why he would request a trade. You understand why he would be frustrated by the entire situation.
Yeah. And I mean, I understand why he's frustrated, but other people, or he, I guess, should say, has to understand, like, he's not operating in a vacuum. How many of those other guys that went from franchise tag to extension have a quarterback on their team that's making the kind of money Joe Burrow is making? How many have another player, maybe even one at his position, that's about to reset the market next year or eventually? It's just, you can't just look at production ceiling and attach it to a value. It goes back to that the analogy Duke always uses with the pizza and how do you slice it up, or the pie, how do you slice it up? And I get it. I mean, I'd be acting the exact same way if I was T. Higgins, but the Bengals have to do what's best for the Bengals. And I get where they're coming from with this. I support it. I don't know that if I was in that position, I would do anything different right now. It's just, you've got the Chase deal coming. You've already got Burrow locked up for all this money. It just, I don't know. It's hard enough to pay a receiver and a quarterback top of market. Two receivers and a quarterback top of market. What else does that leave you to do?
You know, that reminds me, Jay, I've been meaning to talk to you about your behavior behind the scenes here and requesting trades to other podcasts. It's getting to be a little out of hand, okay? I knew you would act this way. You know, we'll just, you know, you just need to play it out, okay? just show up, be quiet. No, I, but I get both sides. I get him using whatever piece of leverage he can, and I get the Bengals taking this stance.
Yeah.
But I get him saying, like, look, if you're not going to give me what everybody else is getting, then just send me somewhere, because plenty of people will. Hmm. And that's where it stands right now. Will he be traded in draft weekend? You know, like we've all written about it. I mean, maybe, probably not. Maybe, though. Hmm. There's always a possibility. No one's going to completely rule that out. It's certainly going to be part of the conversation. And we talked about that in our trade episode last week. So go back and re-listen to that. Okay, but that's the latest franchise tagged player signs an extension. Going through the beast, Dane has 19 receivers with at least a third round grade attached to it. That is bonkers stuff. Okay, I mean, that's just, now they won't all go in the first three rounds, and you know, and his grades, you know, if you go across, whether it's you read Daniel Jeremiah or The Ringer or anybody at ESPN, like they're different. Okay, so like the top 20 here is going to look very different than the top 20 other places, and because it's about fit, and it's about what you can find. There's just so many different types that you can see it go a lot of different ways. But I mean, just the sheer quantity of it is pretty remarkable. In kind of piecing through what Dane put out and what you are, was there anything there that stood out from the receiver group to you, Jay?
Not so much the way he's got them ranked. The one, I don't know, question, it's just the kind of a what happened scenario, where I think you and I were driving to Cleveland for the opener, and Keon Coleman made that incredible catch, to a game-winning catch. I believe it was against Clemson, and we were talking about he's the ideal T. Higgins comp. It just felt like that guy was destined to maybe be one of the top receivers in this class, and he's, for whatever reason, he's fallen back. Now, Dane still has a second round grade on him. He's got him as his number seventh receiver, but it's like, you know, what happened to that guy? It felt like he could be a first round or a number 33 type of pick, a T. Higgins comp. And he's slid down the list. Maybe he hasn't slid. Maybe it's these other guys rising up, because it is an incredible list. I mean, the guys ahead of him, there are no slouches there. Obviously the top three, but then you get into Brian Thomas and Ladd McConkey and A.D. Mitchell. It's just an incredible group all the way through. And that's why I said, if you don't get a guy you like in this one, I don't know what to tell you.
You know, Coleman, I think he has him higher than a lot do, because a lot of people are just really put off by the speed, you know, being slow and lack of separation stuff. And, you know, he's got a Courtland Sutton comp. You know, your best case scenario on Keon Coleman you'd hear is a DeAndre Hopkins comp, you know, just an ultimate contested catch ball winners. But there's a long line of players that have tried to be DeAndre Hopkins that have not competed in this league. Because if you can't get separation at some point, it's going to hurt you no matter how many holy crap catches you make. And that's what stood out when we watched that game, right? It was holy crap catches all over the place, and just picking the ball off dudes' heads. And you're like, man, this guy is a beast. But the full totality of his game probably is like a combination of T. Higgins and Auden Tate, unfortunately, right?
Yes.
It's like, it's not so much T. Higgins. It's like there's a little bit, there's like a piece of the pie that's got some Tate with this, with the lack of separation. But still, somebody that has a real chance to show up. I want to talk about, you know, the personality of the player I think the Bengals are looking for. And by that, we know personality that they look for off threat. These captains want to practice every day, hugely competitive, love ball guys. Everybody wants that, right? But they've valued that a lot. It's not that, you know, not the rest of the league is not in on the secret. I mean, it's that the Bengals have put a lot of value on that here. And that has kind of shown through a lot of their drafts. I thought specifically names that have made sense to me from day one sounded very bangly when you get deep into the background, more of the character stuff that comes out with Dane that nobody else offers, of the what coaches there are saying about him as a practice player, as a competitor, as someone who fights through injury, as all this stuff that only certain people know, stuff that Dane has. I thought Roman Wilson, Ladd McConkey, Ricky Pearsall, all had those lines in there that you see when you go back and look after the Bengals draft a guy, right? It's just like, loves to practice, never wants to miss a practice, best practice player, fought through injury over and over and over again, captain, leader, alpha. Like, they just lean so hard into that stuff that you could, and that's not the be-all, end-all, but when you have a lot of ties out here in terms of talent, I thought those guys in particular, that circle, sounded a lot like Bengals picks, and so I thought it solidified where you might have them in the mix for Cincinnati.
What about the other way, where I think it was last year at the Combine, we talked to Zach about this, where now you've got all this success, you've got the culture in place. Are you willing to step outside of that and bring in, maybe take a risk on a guy? And there's a guy on this list that I'm really intrigued by, and it's Jermaine Burton from Alabama, who just has every physical tool you could want, but a little bit of a shit stirrer. He's been on the shit list of a lot of places he's been a lot of places. Mm-hmm. But you bring a guy like that in, and Troy Walters isn't going to put up with that. And you get him with T, and you get him with Jamar, and you get him around these non-diva type wide receivers and kind of put him in his place, so to speak. I don't know that he's a guy you're going to reach for in the second round, but if you double up, you get a receiver in the second round, receiver in the fourth round, I think that's a guy that could really blow up. You know, you're getting a guy in the third or fourth round, and you're just looking like a complimentary piece. He could be a future number one. Now, he wouldn't be it here with Jamar, obviously, but I wonder if they just stick to the template, or do they say, hey, this, you get to a point where you're willing to take a chance on a guy with that kind of upside?
Yeah. I don't know when we talk to, I mean, everyone has attempted to write the, what makes Boyd, Chase, and Higgins work so well, what makes them such a good trio, why, outside of the obvious talent. And what's the first thing everybody says, whether it's players, whether it's coaches, whether it's outsiders? Selflessness. Mm-hmm. It's this fact that they're willing to share. They don't need it all. They're not going to complain. So the idea of reconfiguring that room and not having that at the center, you know, of at least not having to worry about that. Mm-hmm. You know, I just think that's going to be important here, because it's been a big part of what has made that work. And you better not be saying, I got to get mine, if you're playing with Jamar Chase.
Right.
Okay. And T. Higgins this year and all the others that they, you know, have in there and will have in there. So I think that will matter. I think this would not be the position group to do that to. I think there are other places you can, but this would not be the position group to do that to, because you're just never going to. I got to be number one guy is just never going to be happy here. Because this is not the place for you. One thing that I have mentioned a lot, and I want to point out some research that I've sort of done on this, is the need for inside outside versatility in this position. Yeah. And I think the further you go down the draft board with the difference between round two and round three, there's a cliff there and it can be stark. You're giving up, I think, inside outside versatility there. And maybe you're going to find slot only in round three, and that's okay. I mean, you can go Tyler Boyd one for one if you want to do that. But I think what really can make the offense sing is somebody that can help augment Jamar Chase. And that means allowing him to move around more, allowing the defense to never quite know where he's going to go. And let's be honest, when you had Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins, you kind of knew where those two guys were going to be most of the time. And they did a good job of still moving Jamar around, but it was usually in the same way, underneath screens, things like that. I think they want to lean into doing that more, and that makes sense. Let him continue to be the one chess piece that no one can track, and a guy that can do a little bit of both and still win on the outside, despite being your slot guy, is what makes you more explosive and what makes Jamar Chase more dangerous. I just want to give you one stat, Jay, because I know you'll appreciate that. I have many more. This will be in a story down the line. But this was when you look at really the high volume receivers. So I went over the last 2 years, there were 14 receivers that had at least 260 targets, your stars. Okay. And you look at slot usage of those guys. You know, Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase were kind of right next to each other, right in the like 20, 23, 24% range. And you can get up into the 30% range with those guys. If you, some of the guys that really move around a lot more, Tyreek Hills, there's a few others that aren't, that are kind of all over the place and spend a lot more time inside. But here's the difference. When the Vikings use Ja'Marr Chase, 20 plus air yards on the target, 30% of the time from the slot of Justin Jefferson. When the Bengals use Ja'Marr Chase inside, 3% of the throws were 20 plus air yards. 78% were less than 10. Most of these on screens, he had the lowest yards per catch from the slot of any of that group, despite having one of the highest usage rates in there. When he was in there, they throw it to him a lot because they're only using him underneath and throwing screens. If you want to expand Ja'Marr Chase's role, that's it. You do more of the Justin Jefferson stuff where you're sending him down the field out of the slot. You're running these deep crossers and overs with him. And that comes from more routes where you can switch guys inside and out and feel comfortable with your outside weapon to be able to win. That's why I think a true next level for this offense can be the inside-outside versatility rather than the pure slot option. Or a T. Higgins replacement at X, which I just don't necessarily see because they do need somebody who can be, you know, dynamic inside for them.
Yeah, and I've got a guy that I think fits that. But I, going back to your stat, I wonder, you know, how many of those Ja'Marr snaps in the slot were in empty when it was just get it out right away. And they love what he does with the ball in his hands. Talk about how he's a running back once he gets the ball in his hands. So I get that. That kind of makes sense where that the average depth of target is so small with him. I've had him as my second round pick in both of my mocks and people don't seem to like it, but I just, Jalen Polk from Washington, mm-hmm. inside outside versatility, really good at beating zone. And so a guy that, you know, you put, I see a big comp to Tyler Boyd with him. And he maybe is a little limited on whatever his upside is, but he kind of fits that unselfish mold that Tyler Boyd had. I remember Tyler Boyd, it wasn't just about targets and catches. It was about money. I remember when the first time he was up for an extension, he's like, I'll sign whenever. He was happy to be Robin to AJ Green's Batman. And then it flipped and Ja'Marr came in. And, you know, Polk is kind of, it's like a little mini Bengals Washington was, because mm-hmm. you had Adunze and you had McMillan and you got a great quarterback in Penix throwing to him, and they had to share all the production. And I really like that comp where he can be more of a slot. If T. Higgins moves on, then he can play outside, do both. And that, like you said, it frees you up to move Ja'Marr around quite a bit. But you know, Dane's got a third round grade on him. I don't know that he lasts till the third round. And maybe it is a reach in the second round, but I like the idea of him as a fit, even more so than just his overall skill set.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's somebody that Nate will bring up specifically here later in the show for the interview we did last week, and mention that when you talk about inside outside versatility. This is a good chance to kind of give a broad view of this class, and Jay and I'll come with a little bit more Bengals specific rankings out of this. But let's bring in Hayden Winks. I hope you guys follow what him and Josh Norris do over at Underdog Fantasy. They do fantastic work specifically with the skill position players. So here is a conversation about this receiver class with Hayden Winks. All right, now it's a great time as we dive into receivers. We've never had our next guest on the show before, but I just have to. I have to, because I have been deep in the wormhole, addicted to these wide receiver prospect videos that they're doing over at Underdog Fantasy, and that's Josh Norris and Hayden Winks. And Hayden, you've joined me here today. First of all, congrats on everything you guys are doing over at Underdog Fantasy. It's awesome. The prospect, go to the YouTube page, youtube.com/underdogfantasy. Watch the, if you're into the receiver world, there's just nothing better out there than going into them. Congrats on everything you guys have been doing over there.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Josh and I are having a lot of fun. We're probably going to do 20 wide receiver videos. We're about halfway done with them. We'll hit on the quarterbacks and some of the running backs and then Brock Bowers. So yeah, focus on the fantasy positions, but we'll also have an NFL draft stream and more to come.
Yeah. Brock Bowers, now you're talking Bengals fans language. You know, it gets them all excited, gets them all shaking a little bit. So they're going to be excited to go check out that one too. But I wanted to have you on because I've loved how in-depth you guys are able to go into not just the big three, and there's not a reason to spend a ton of time on those guys because we know that's not going to be a thing that's going to end up in the Bengals range. But really, we've just never had quite a cornucopia of these day two receivers like this before, where it's like, there's what, 10, 12 that you could see going in that anywhere from 15 to 90. Right. Yep. And then I bet you every team maybe has them all ranked differently. How does this class in that regard stack up? Because you guys have been doing this for a long time. How does that particular circle stack up here this year compared to previous?
I was about 15 wide receivers deep before I finally found a prospect where I was like, not my cup of tea. And I was like going off the consensus big board. And what you're kind of noticing for me is some of these slot wide receivers that I would typically be a little bit scared of, how like the NFL is evolving with all the motion and kind of hiding some of the limitations with size at the position. Now players like Xavier Worthy, Ricky Pearsall, those type of guys where maybe I was like, I'm a little bit nervous 10 years ago because offensive coordinators didn't really know how to use those types. Now there's like very clear answers. So I think that we're kind of expanding on the types of wide receivers that could win. And then the second part of that is there's actually some size, like some actually X wide receivers. Now that's not necessarily the Bengals problem at all right now, but for a lot of the other teams out there, it's hard to find like a big X wide receiver. In the last couple of draft classes, it seemed like everybody was small. So now we have these slot wide receivers that are wicked fast. And also it's kind of the return of some of these big wide receivers. So yeah, this is like one of the deepest classes. I have a million round two grades, it seems like.
Yeah. And it's in that, and that's what's gonna be interesting, because I think every team is gonna be looking for something specifically and different that's missing. As everybody now builds these basketball team wide receiver rooms where they want, you know, like the Bengals have had here. They've had Jamar Chase, who's do everything, and they've had, you know, go get it T. Higgins, and then Tyler Boyd underneath. Everybody's trying to find these different pieces, and gosh, it just seems like this year there's so many of them that the order that they go in might not really even necessarily be representative of the talent level. It's just the fit and the time in the draft we find them. That said, I want to talk about the Bengals specifically with, I think they love the idea of inside outside versatility, slot. They're not afraid of slot only. But you know, the idea of you can play Jamar in the slot more if you have a slot who's more inside outside versatile. Let's rank that top of the board and take the big three away. Where does that sit for you if you're trying to hit that profile?
Well, yeah, that's the great part about Jamar Chase, is he's so versatile that you can kind of go different flavors here. And then obviously I think that T. Higgins will be back on the roster, so I think that someone like Brian Thomas, I think that would be kind of a one for one replacement for T. Higgins. But in theory, if they wanted to go with Brian Thomas, you can kick Jamar Chase into the slot. But I think like more like the classic fit would be Ladd McConkey. He's more of a late round one guy, but let's say he falls all the way into that kind of 49th overall range. I think that he would be a perfect kind of fit. I thought he was a fantastic route runner. His production was up and down, but like on a per route, per target basis, Ladd McConkey is as shifty as it gets. He's a little bit undersized, so a lot of people want to call him a slot wide receiver. I watched him win on the outside against SEC competition way too much. And I think that there's some times where he get kind of thrown around against press man coverage, but some of these out routes, if there's a corner sitting on off coverage, I think he's going to be fantastic at that. And I think for the Bengals offense in particular, somebody like Ladd McConkey would be perfect kind of in this inside outside role. And basically his running mate in the SEC, Ricky Pearsall out of Florida, basically the same profile. I think that Ladd McConkey was just a step quicker in and out of his breaks compared to Ricky Pearsall, but Ricky Pearsall, the same mold, most likely a slot wide receiver, but one plenty on the outside, inside, outside routes, option routes, any of those type of things, I think would be a perfect fit. So Ladd McConkey and Ricky Pearsall are kind of these like vertical guys if you want them to be, but for the most part can kind of work in the intermediate and underneath part of the field.
Yeah, that's the other part. You know, Bengals making a very much a very public play to add explosiveness. They weren't as, considering the weapons, I mean, that they had last year, and let's take the calf and the Burrow injury out of it. It's obvious, but still, even when everything was going nowhere near as explosive as they wanted to be, really beyond Jamar Chase, and they've attacked that this year with exchanging out Mixon for Zach Moss, adding Gesicki, who can let them finally throw downfield to a tight end, which they've never done. But, you know, that's why I think stretching the field may be something that Tyler Boyd didn't do as much of.
Yeah.
As a slower slot is really enticing for them. And so I think it opens them up to a new world of possibility there. That's why I wanted to bring in a couple other names, Jalen McMillan and Roman Wilson. And maybe they're on the next level down. But where do you see those guys in maybe in comparison to the first two that you mentioned?
So I have different opinions on those two. I have Roman Wilson as a round two grade. He was a good player at Michigan. He didn't get obviously the volume because of the offense, but when you watch him, he's a vertical slot wide receiver. Now his catch radius is small, 5'11", 185 pounds, but he's runs a 4.41, which is much faster than most slot wide receivers. They would use him in pre-snap motion. That I was talking about some of these schemed up touches. He was outside on 31% of his snaps. And I think his big route that he runs at a great rate is these crossing routes where you can kind of run away from defenders. And if there's going to be a ton of one-on-one matchups in the slot because you have to guard T. Higgins and Jamar Chase. I think that his ability to run away from defenders is a pretty interesting fit for Roman Wilson. And then the last note I had on him is 78% of his catchable targets last year went for first downs, and only 2% of his targets were dropped. So it's not just that he's speed, he's super reliable. And if you watch JJ McCarthy, a lot of these third and long situations, they kept going to Roman Wilson. And then for Jalen McMillan out of Washington, I didn't see the explosiveness that I saw from Roman Wilson. So I had him kind of buried into like the round three, round four range from him, where I can see Roman Wilson actually providing that explosiveness. I'm not sure if I saw that quite to the same degree as Jalen McMillan.
Yeah, you know, it's you can, and that's an area where if 49 doesn't happen, a receiver for the Bengals, those are the names, you know, that's that next tier down too that you start considering. And it's just many years you could get really excited about a guy like Jalen McMillan, and now he like falls into this group a little bit further down because there's just so many other players to think about. One other thing that you have, and you've written a great piece kind of going through your rankings here, and have your wide receiver model and trying to avoid these busts. What is it, you know, that you view as the biggest red flags, you know, one or two of those, I guess, that where these busts are coming from? Because, you do get into this hit rate, especially if you're talking second round, and we see it year in and year out, flip the coin. But when it hits, boy, is it sweet. But there's the other side of it. What are those flags for you?
So what I'm always looking for, I want the Power Five guys. I want the people from the best universities. I think there's something to how well you were recruited. If Nick Saban thinks you're good, I think that's a good characteristic. So on the flip side, some smaller schools, I get nervous. And then like even back to like the Baylor days when all those guys were going round one, kind of saw that with TCU. So the Big 12 at one point was making me a little bit nervous. But really, it's if you didn't declare early, that's kind of a weak spot for me. So if you played for the fourth or fifth year, that's concerning. I think that size ends up mattering just based off of what your ceiling could potentially be and what role you're going to have. And then the production does matter. I think that the 40 times are nice to have, but not every single good wide receiver in the league is really fast. I think if you want to be like truly elite, you got to have that. But I'm looking for early age production. I want you to declare early. And in a perfect world, you were playing on one of the best teams. So that's the criteria I'm looking for. So someone like Roman Wilson doesn't hit every single one of those. He played into his senior year, but he was efficient. He was productive within the confines of that offense. And then Michigan obviously was very good.
we've had some interesting body types this year, where last year we spent all this time, you mentioned it, talking about all the small guys. And so everybody was like, well, what do we think? Is the NFL now turning into a little guy receiver league? And then Tank Dell happened, and you said, well, maybe they are, right? Mm-hmm. And Jaden Reed, you know, we talk about, he's kind of a Roman Wilson comp for me in some ways. And the size is the same, the speed is the same, the profile of what he, you know, kind of did in college is the same. You know, and now I wonder, we've got some of these guys that are these, you know, more the yak guys, and you're like, they can't all go to the 49ers, right? Like, right, you're talking about Leggett, Corley, there's a number of these guys in the middle. What do you make of some of these guys that are more of these yak guys that don't have as much of the intermediate in a Bengal system? I don't know if that fits, but how easy is that to, maybe, can you see projections to becoming that type of an intermediate guy that can work inside, even though most of their stuff was manufactured scheme stuff, right, that didn't have as much intermediate love?
All that stuff to me is price dependent. Like, for example, round one, Treylon Burks, almost all of his college production was schemed up. So drafting a player like that in round one always takes a huge projection that he's going to be able to do more than that. And then, like, on the flip side, this year, Xavier Leggett, I don't know if he's going to go round two or round three. Kind of, it seems like evaluations are all over the place with him. He's a fifth-year guy out of South Carolina, but he has the size and some of the flashes where he wasn't just a manufactured touch player, where he was actually winning on post routes. For example, he had some back shoulder fades near the sideline that he was coming down to, and he actually has the size profile to maybe become an outside wide receiver in addition to the manufactured touches. So I like that type of profile, because maybe if you hit on some of the manufactured touches, awesome, but also you can actually hang out in three wide receiver sets and run actual routes. And somebody like Malachi Corley, who is exceptional yards after the catch wise, I just didn't see him running the regular routes. I believe his air yards per reception, like how deep downfield he caught the ball on average last year, was at 3.8 yards. I mean, that is basically running back tight end type of numbers there.
Yeah.
So trying to expand his role to winning on the outside or winning from the slot just down the field takes a little bit more of an imagination. So I think it just kind of depends on the price point. I think those guys, like, if you're only going to be in three wide receiver sets, you're only playing 50-60% of the snaps, you're getting 4 or 5 targets, I think that's more like a round three type of player. And then the big example is like Deebo Samuel. He can do it all. That's a round one type of player. I think that most people that try to be Deebo Samuel end up looking like LaVisca Chenault, and then all of a sudden you're kind of out of the league.
Yeah, exactly. There's two sides to that thing. You know, they can look the same, and then they don't play the same. Yep. Before you go, let me give you a chance to look, make yourself look great. Let's say let's take the big three out of this. Give me two players, maybe somebody you have a round two grade, maybe somebody you have a round three grade on, that in 3 years we'll say have become the best of the bunch, or, you know, been to a Pro Bowl or had an 1,000 yard season.
So I have a round one grade on Ladd McConkey. It sounds like he's more likely to go in round two. He's just way too quick out of his breaks, and that's, to me, the big difference. His catch radius is not the same as someone like Emmanuel Sanders or kind of these like Tyler Lockett guys, but his route running, all of that stuff is fantastic. Some of the comps that he has, just if you're looking at like his height, weight, speed, production, it comes out like Chris Olave. So people want to put him in this weird bucket, but he can actually win downfield. I think at the very worst, you're getting Ladd McConkey looking like Zay Flowers. And then scrolling down the list a little bit more here, let's go with a deep sleeper. Jermaine Burton, round three, round four. So out of Alabama, there's kind of some character concerns with him, so I don't know any of the details of those. But on the football field, his just ability to pluck the ball out of the air, run in a straight line, 4.4 speed. He has a vertical ability. He has pretty good hands. He's also, like, for a vertical receiver, he's not so skinny where you worry that he's going to get pushed out into the sideline or has to be in the slot. He's got some like good size to him. There's some yards after the catch ability. Alabama's offense looked totally different because of their quarterback, who was such a runner last year. So his production's not off the charts, but he was definitely the best wide receiver at Alabama. So I think that there's a chance that he kind of becomes this, like, maybe 6 targets per game. That's kind of where he maxes out. But if he was making a couple 50-yard touchdowns per season, that would not be a surprise to me at all.
Love it. Absolutely. Everybody, make sure you go over. If you're watching this right now on YouTube, great. Congratulations. You're on YouTube. Go on over to Underdog Fantasy and dive into the wormhole. You're going to love all the stuff that Josh and Hayden do over there, because it's just it's fantastic. And there's plenty more coming. Trust me, you'll see it when the Brock Bowers one comes out. I can already see all the Bengals, yes, just the Bengals fans just scurrying over as quickly as possible. They can't.
I love it.
They
too.
can't wait to find it. Hayden, appreciate your time. Thank you very much for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, thank you.
So there's Hayden Winks. Great stuff from Hayden, and again, please make sure you're checking out everything that they have done over there at Underdog Fantasy. It's awesome. Subscribe to them. Subscribe to us. All that stuff. Specifically, you know, when we talk about types, there's some of these fast guys, right? And mm-hmm. and you know, Troy Walters and Zach Taylor were at Texas. Okay, so Xavier Worthy puts up a 4.21. You've got, I mean, A.D. Mitchell can fly. He's had some big catches in some big spots. I find that their presence down there is now, I mean, they're going to go places, and Texas has a load of players, including Byron Murphy and Tavondre Sweat, that you'd be doing background on, and the receivers. There's a lot there. So, but when Troy Walters was there too, you know, they're keeping an eye on those guys. I just, Jay, you know, I always worry about Bengals fans. I worry about you. And I don't want anybody to go into John Ross PTSD situation here. Okay. Like, the guy who broke John Ross's records, you know, I don't know about that. I don't know about that.
I mean, I get it. I can see why people would see that comp, and for me, it's not so much the speed. I wonder about these smaller guys. You know, like Tank Dell last year, smaller guy sets the league on fire, gets hurt. The durability of the smaller guys, but when it comes strictly to the speed element, these guys that burn it up at the combine, there's not a lot of great history there of translation to being really quality pros. I went and looked at the fastest 40 times, 4.32 or better, mm-hmm. In the last, going back to 2013. There were 12 guys that were drafted in rounds 1 through 3 of those speed burners. John Ross, obviously, on the list. Big bust. Henry Ruggs, bust for other reasons. Other names: Tyquan Thornton, Rondale Moore, Paris Campbell, Andy Isabella. Curtis Samuels had a pretty nice career. But Velus Jones, Anthony Schwartz, Dree Archer, Marquise Goodwin. And then another guy that had a pretty solid career, first round pick in 2016, Will Fuller. But you look at those guys, and the fastest of the fast, it doesn't always translate. It rarely translates. And I you don't want to rule a guy out because that. You don't want to say, we don't want the fast guys. But I think you have to approach with a little bit of caution to those guys. They can't just be burners. They've got to bring something more to the table. And, you know, what is Worthy? Is he like 165? I mean, he's slight. So yes. it feels like a John Ross comp, and I don't know that. It's funny because I took that back. I mean, some of these guys that were burners went in later rounds too, and they never really developed. Clyde Gates, Calvin Austin, Travis Benjamin. So there's a pretty hefty track record there of proceed with caution when it comes to those burners.
And how about this? I've got complimentary stats for you, Jay.
All right.
And that is, let's take the opposite side of that. Let's not value speed. Let's look at the last 10 years and picked in the first three rounds that ran 4.55 or slower. Okay. We're down into the depths there. Here's this list. And you tell me, listener, watcher, which grouping of players mentioned you would prefer. Michael Wilson ran a 4.58. David Bell, 4.65. Treylon Burks, 4.55. Laviska Shenault, 4.58. Cooper Kupp, 4.62. Michael Thomas, 4.57. Tyler Boyd, 4.58. Michael Wilson had a really nice year as a rookie this year. And you've had, you know, Shenault hasn't quite worked out. Burks has been scuffling. David Cup, Thomas, Boyd. Like, it's just there's a higher rate of overcoming being slow than there is making the most of being insanely fast, because it's, I just feel like, and you look at top receivers and some of their relative athletic scores, right? We go to that stuff. They're not a bunch of high nines, and they're not a bunch of elites. It's receiver is just so much about the other stuff. It's about route running. It's about polish. It's about separation. It's about that, you know, it's about where you end up. And so I just think overvaluing some of that physical stuff, you obviously need tons of it, but overvaluing some of that stuff, specifically when you get into things like straight line speed, it's just, it's going to put you into a bad place. It's going to have you thinking about John Ross. And I worry about that. And so as tantalizing that is, you'd want to see more from Xavier Worthy. And that's why, despite his speed, you know, he's going to be all the way back there as a later pick. That type of a pick is one that would make me nervous. What stands out for me in this group, and I mentioned him earlier, is Ladd McConkey. I don't see a way he ends up with the Bengals, like, unless there's a trade back or trade up. He just seems like he's destined to be in that late one, early two range. And so how do you end up there? I don't know. They probably have to trade with something to move, but either maybe they're trading T. Higgins, you know, which would be a surprise, but you're talking about having to have one of those picks. But he's, to me, is the dream. Like, I did a big board, of course, as we all do, and I stuck him in at 15th on my Bengals big board, Bengals specific big board for this draft, as just as emphasis, not necessarily because I think he's definitely 15th on their board, but like, that's how nice I think he would be as a fit in this system. You know, he's a little bit smaller, but he just seems like a dream fit for Burrow, for the way he plays. He's got everything that you want in terms of separation, easy target, understanding zones, working off script, getting himself open quickly, right? Burrow, what is it? Get the ball, process it, see it. One's quick winners. They offset offensive line issues with quick winners on the outside and gives those guys chances to make plays. That's Ladd McConkey, right? And on a lesser degree, it's Roman Wilson, and it's Ricky Pearsall too. Roman Wilson, that's what he is. That's what he has been. He is a guy who's got separation skills. He's a guy who's got nice hands. He's not going to drop the ball. He understands zones. But the thing that stood out to me with him, Jay, was when you watch his plays last year, how many turned into him off script, knowing exactly where to go to make himself an available target for J.J. McCarthy and putting it on him and making tons of big plays that way. And I'm like, I've seen enough Joe Burrow football to know what I'm looking at. And players that can have the awareness to find their quarterback, understand what he's trying to do, see the zone, get there fast. This is plenty of speed to burn here with Roman Wilson. That plays in Cincinnati. And that stood out to me, and a reason why I put him a tick over some other guys.
Yeah, and those two specifically were where I said earlier, where a little concern about the guys that are under 6 foot and injury possibility. You don't worry about. I mean, if McConkey or Roman Wilson are available, I mean, the podcast I do with Dallas Robinson, we did a mock draft. We did receiver first, defense tackle first, offensive tackle first. I can't remember, and we did trade back. I can't remember which one it was, but on one of them, they were using the PFN mock draft simulator, and Ladd McConkey was there in the second round. And I just interrupted. Dallas was starting to talk about all the guys. I was like, forget it. You're running to the table for that guy. If he is somehow there in the second round, it would be a blast watching training camp and just watching how he works against whoever is guarding him in the slot, whatever DB is going to get. He just turns guys around and makes SEC DBs look foolish. It just an incredible route runner. And if he gets on the same page, even if they're choice routes and I could see him and Burrow just having an instant connection, and it would be a lot of fun to watch. And then Roman Wilson, just you know, being an Ohio State fan and rooting against that guy, he's just frustrating. He just makes play after play after play. And I think Bengals fans, Bengals players, coaches, anybody would be thrilled to get either one of those two guys.
Yeah. And you mentioned it, you know, you're going to be a little worried about the size and age a little bit. You got some older guys in the fourth year senior, Ricky Pearsall, fifth year. He's got, you know, moved around in there. 6'1", 191 for Pearsall, 5'11", 185. But Roman Wilson, 5'11", 185, and those testing numbers and some of that production, Jaden Reed. It's he plays that way. And we saw what Jaden Reed did last year. You know, I just think the league can't be scared of those small guys anymore. Now, 165 small, you better be crazy dynamic and a crazy route runner like Tank Dell was. You know, Xavier Worthy is not that. He's just fast. You better have something just off the charts elsewhere, okay, in ability to break yourself free. And if you don't, I mean, I just think you can get away more now with that range, with 185, with one, than you could five years ago, even just because of the way I think that opens it up for those. And we've seen that. We've seen that a lot the last couple of years with guys in that range of size are able to, if they can work, be strong enough to work through press releases. But, you know, teams can, like Hayden was saying, it's so much easier for teams to scheme up ways to get guys open with easy motions, get them off press, whatever, that it's just not as, it's not as big of a thing that you worry about as when you felt like you needed the big, strong guy. The other thing is, and you mentioned the Washington guys, Jay, you know, the chance of them ending up with McMillan or Polk, I think is interesting and are good, because that's the other thing. They play that ball. They play that unselfish ball. They will block. They will get in there and do some dirty work stuff for you and enjoy it. And that has just been a big part of, you know, the way the Bengals have played around Cincinnati here. I mean, that's just, it's been a part of what they've done. And so I think that's going to matter. That's going to matter too. Go ahead, Jay.
I was going to say, so I was looking for some stats to support my argument about the small guys and the injury risk, and it didn't work out. So I went away from it. But just last year alone, there were 12 guys drafted that were under 6 foot. And I guess Slider, 9 of them played at least 16 games. Tank Dell had the broken leg, a fluke. Charlie Jones, the broken wrist. That doesn't matter what your size is. You look at some of these other guys that were, you know, smaller size and had, you mentioned it. You've also got Zay Flowers. You mentioned Jaden Reed, Marvin Mims. There were guys that, I mean, it's 1 year. You never know when that injury is going to happen. But I do wonder if teams are starting to maybe take more of a risk on those little guys, and if they've got the other. If they've got the toughness and the way the league is going, where you can't pop them over the middle and all the other rules that work against the defense. It's just, I was surprised. I was fully ready to make that my Jay's got stats, where these little guys always get hurt, and it's not supported. It does happen. And when it does happen, everybody's like, oh, look, that's why. But overwhelming, I mean, 9 out of 12 played a full season last year. It's pretty good.
And a lot of them had great seasons.
Yeah.
And that's something to certainly keep in mind. One other aspect of the receiver group that I want to touch on before we get into Brock Bowers and some of the other stuff with Nate is, you know, the concept of the more T. Higgins replacement. So more outside, a little inside. Okay. And if that could happen. There's a few names certainly that you would look at. Troy Franklin from Oregon. Keon Coleman's not going to be inside in any way, but you know how crazy that would be. You know, A.D. Mitchell, I think, you know, could probably be considered that. You're getting a little bit more on the outside with them. And amongst the top, you know, if we're talking second, third round, maybe you're getting to some other guys in the third round. Maybe you're considering Burton, like you mentioned, or one of these other guys, or Brennan Rice, whatever.
Yeah.
But I just, it's certainly possible, you know, I worry about Franklin's, you know, Franklin is built kind of like almost like Devonta Smith, you know, Slim Reaper style, where he's just, he's 6'2", 176. He's on such a small frame and he's got speed, but he's not super inside sudden separation stuff that you'd like to see as much, but certainly can be a playmaker and straight line speed that you want. I worry about that combination and how it would fit here, and maybe it would. But I mean, it's possible. I would just be surprised. I'm not saying that they wouldn't do that. It just, to me, doesn't totally fit where I think they would. It would be leaving themselves exposed at slot receiver, you know. And but maybe you then consider something else. Maybe you're considering, hey, okay, Mike Gesicki, stop meeting with James Casey. Start meeting with Troy Walters. You're a slot receiver now. We're going to use you that way anyway. You're running more 12, right, which they're open to doing. And Chase is inside more. Gesicki's playing slot more. You're using Trent and Irwin. You're hoping Charlie Jones can rise up. It becomes more piecemeal. I think that's the way you counteract if you were to go that direction. But again, do you want something piecemeal, or do you want something that has a little bit more structure and sets you up to it? I guess it probably depends on what you feel like the drop off is in the talent level of the player.
I mean, piecemeal is not a bad way to go when you look at the pieces this year with Gesicki. And like you said, Charlie, Trent Irwin is fine in there. And then you just push it off for a year. And then next year is when you get the more true dynamic slot receiver after T leaves. I don't know. I obviously like the idea of inside out, but I could see them doing that and just getting more of an outside guy. You mentioned Brendan Rice, 13% of his snaps are in the slot. So pretty much outside, but he does have experience in there, and he's a guy in going back to your slow stats. You know, he 4.5, going back to Keon Coleman, 4.6. You were going through those numbers and those players. Mm-hmm. I just kept thinking, well, Keon Coleman, he's got all the other, he doesn't have the separation, doesn't have the speed, but he's got everything else you want. If you got a guy with that kind of contested catch and ability and the catch radius and all that, and you've got a super accurate passer in Burrow, he would be really interesting in this offense. But the Brendan Rice thing, again, he's a later, probably third, fourth round. If he double up, maybe that's the way to go. But just the idea of getting that pedigree and a guy you know that's going to do everything right and work hard, and just the upside potential there, he's another one that I think would be intriguing as the back end of a double up.
In the league of Puka Nacua, okay, like any of these guys, if you pick up the beast and you start looking around in the between 15 and 30, any of these guys could be this year's Puka Nacua. You know, that you get the right spot and the right fit. I mean, there's talented. I mean, Jamari Thrash from Louisville, mm-hmm. like, what a fun player. He's at 26 on Dane's board here. You know, I mean, Luke McCaffrey, somebody there's just, you can find, there's just so many. And that's why I think the double up is certainly in play later on. I don't know if it's for sure going to happen, but it's, you would think that it would be in play. The one, so to transition into Nate here, the other part about potentially piecemealing together would be Brock Bowers, right? he would create more piecemeal where you can go out there and he's basically your slot guy, mm-hmm. with Drew Sample and 12, or you're playing Gesicki and Bowers together and Bowers is more of your regular tight end. Gesicki's out there in slot and you're basically in 4 wide. You've got a lot of different things that you can do with him as a weapon. So I wanted to ask Nate about this, and then we can do a little more hash out. One last hash out on the Brock Bowers and tight end conversation when we come back. So here's Nate Tice of the Athletic NFL Football Show. Incredible work. He does Robert Mays over there. And I hope you guys have listened to the Pass Catchers podcast that they've done, because there's great stuff up there now. But we'll bring him in, and he talks a little bit about the receivers too that we just did. But we're gonna rehash tight end aspect of this next. Here's Nate Tice. All right, now moving on here on the growl. You know, I recommend to everybody that you just stop listening right now. Now, you don't normally do that, but I want you to go to the Athletic Football Podcast and listen to the latest one on receivers and pass catchers, because what Nate and Dane and Robert did in breaking down that conversation, exhaustive is not even the right word. I mean, it was really getting into this. And for Bengals fans that want to know about all of these, you know, day two guys, there's so many of them. It was such a great deep dive into it. I want to make sure you go and listen to that and take time. But I had more questions after that, believe it or not. And that's why I brought Nate Tyson to join here. Nate, what's up, buddy?
How you doing? Yeah, this is the receiver pod or the pass catcher pod, because there is one guy we had to include there. We had to do, it was a lot different than last year, which was a weaker receiver class. This one, Robert and I actually had to come up with categories. Robert does that just to limit me. It's just to go like, it's just to keep me on schedule, keep me within the rails, keep us under the time. So, but it's a compliment to this year's class with that position and a couple other positions, that it's so deep. There's so many interesting guys that it took an hour and a half to talk about all of them, because that's kind of how this class is.
Yeah. There's so many different options, and we've kind of talked through a lot about what the Bengals are looking for. They're obviously unique because they have Burrow and he's unique, and they have Chase, and this year they have Higgins, and they're looking for the next Boyd, but maybe a future Higgins. And there's a lot of different kind of pieces that they're a unique situation because of where they're at. I'm not going to start with the receivers. I want to start with where you guys spent a lot of time, and that was with the Brock Bowers conversation, because it's also unique to the Bengals in that they have taken on the 1 year veteran value and churned out production over and over and over again, unbelievably, whether you're talking about even CJ Uzama, Hayden Hurst, Tanner Hudson, like they just do this. Tell me about Bowers and how he could be. I think we all know that he's fun and he's very good, and like that's not debatable, but how he could be an evolutionary thing for the Bengals and taking them to a different way of how they can operate schematically and offensively if they took him.
Yeah, Zach Taylor, and really probably because of what Joe Burrow prefers too, is there's a lot of 11 personnel, a lot of three receiver looks. It's why not? Those are our guys. We have Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, and Tyler Boyd is one of the best slot receivers in the game, so let's get him on the field as much as possible. What Brock Bowers is, like you mentioned, Boyd going on, moving on, T. Higgins, his whole situation. Bowers, to me, even if he has the tight end label, he really is more like a power slot receiver, a pass catcher that can align where Tyler Boyd would traditionally align, because he is such a good athlete, such an explosive athlete, such a good pass catcher. He can get open and beat safeties. He can beat slot corners. He can beat linebackers easily. He's that type of mismatch. And Zach Taylor and this offense being so much 11 personnel, McVay, where he comes from with Sean McVay, he has other influences, but most recently with Sean McVay and the Shanahan guys, their preferred offense is 12 personnel, two tight ends. And that's because makes the defense dictate what they're trying to stop. And then you can go off of that. Robert always likes to use the term hold the pen last, in which I agree with about that. That's what 12 personnel can do if you use it right. What Bowers does is the Bengals hypothetically could stay in 12 personnel or stay in 11 personnel, and always have their best five out there and always have different looks depending on what the defense wants to throw at them. They're giving themselves more paths, more options, potential options to have answers or to just create mismatches. Like a Bowers Chase two-man game would be just phenomenal. Like just because they're almost similarly built, even if one's a tight end version, you know, he's 40 pounds heavier, but they kind of are, and they kind of have that explosiveness where they bounce off of guys. I know you wrote about it, but like just that's what Bowers has, that same kind of strength to his game. I even said that he's almost graceful in a way where it's like he catches in, bounces off a guy, never loses his foot. He's bending like just doing all these amazing things. Bowers to me has been, he's his own thing. I've used the term offensive weapon, which I know gets thrown around, but for him, it actually applies because he can align anywhere. That would unlock a new element of this offense that wouldn't be foreign to Zach Taylor. And I think it would just unlock a new, these are our new best pass catchers. And it, yeah. it gives you a better option, a great high-end number two, potentially a different type of flavor than T. Higgins, but someone that complement Chase's game well because of all the two things that those two could do.
Could he be redundant with Gesicki in some ways? I mean, I know it is, we're talking 1 year, so I don't, you don't want to draft for 1 year, but when you're talking about a team that's kind of in right now with the way that they're treating the Higgins situation going for it, is there a redundancy to what Gesicki is? I'm sure Bowers gives you more as a, you know, as a blocker, yeah. but that's not really why he's here. You know,
no, he's the get first downs and catch touchdowns, yeah. but you're, that's a good point though, is Bowers. He's not a great blocker. He's not going to be Kittle, but he's not bad. Like he's not, Gesicki's a net negative. Like he is a negative every time he has to block. I've never seen him win a block. I just haven't. Like it's not his game. He truly is a receiver. Bowers can scrap and do some of the dirty work stuff. The thing is like did they give Hudson or Sample a 3-year deal? They gave one of them kind of like
Sample a three and Hudson just back. Yep.
And I liked both of those guys kind of like as far as like what they had to play last year, and those guys are compliments to Bowers. Those two would have a better skill set, so I agree with you that there is some redundancy, but that's also one of those things where it's like, all right, well, sorry Gesicki, we're not prioritizing you anyways. All right, Bowers is taking your reps and the other guys would come on because they can block. So those other two guys would I actually think have complementary skill sets, but not Gesicki, but I think he's a rental anyways, so
correct. Yeah, that's yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's not like they spent, I mean, you spent $2.5 million on Gesicki. It's throwaway if you feel like that.
If you get squeezed out in camp and you're like, there's not a role. It's not the end of the world.
Yeah. I think the conversation that comes a lot of times with Bowers is, look, I mean, we know this list of the last 10 years and tight ends, right? You're using weapon, but I'll use tight ends taken in the first round. What makes him different from that list? You know, what makes him different from, you know, OJ Howard and TJ Hockenson and Pitts and Ingram and Ebron and Fant, where it's just taken a while and the league has just really struggled here with translating. Oh,
I know. Well, so Pitts and Bowers, even if they're both have high pedigree, you know, coming into this league, they win different ways. Pitts is a ball winner, almost built like an outside receiver, built like a Higgins. You know, he wins kind of that same way or was projected to win that kind of way. While Bowers is a yak king. He averaged more yards after catch per reception than Malik Nabers, more than Marvin Harrison, more than any receiver, over 8 yards after catch. He's used on screens, like outside screens. They run receiver screens for Brock Bowers, and he's good at them because he's so good with that ball in his hands. That's where differences are. Hockenson was more of a receiving tight end that can grow into an inline guy. He's more of a seam bender type. You know, he attacks the intermediate areas, best on flats and things. Noah Fant was more of an idea. A lot of these tight ends, not a lot of college tight ends have production. And usually the ones that do are glorified receivers anyway. They're 6'1", 220. You know, they're like these weird types of guys. Bowers has enough size and the production's already there starting day one. Starting as a freshman for a national championship team, he was the number one guy. So there's not as much projection needed with him, but there's still ceiling with him. There's still a high ceiling with him. So I think that's why he's a little different flavor than high antennas. One guy that's kind of come to mind to me was Kellen Winslow II. When he got drafted by the Browns in the top 10 years and years ago, that's his skill set's more like that than any of these other highly drafted guys. And Eric Ebron, whatever failure tight end you want to throw in here, he's so much more different than those types of guys.
Yeah. We've talked a lot here about some of the guys that make the most sense. We're talking about the Bengals at 49 and these, you know, Ricky Pearsall, Ladd McConkey, who probably won't make it there, but he's certainly like the ideal fit what they'd be looking for right now. I mean, he's like, you know, 1A if they could find a way to make that happen. And some of these other guys, I wanted to ask you, who do you look at that class of, you know, obviously beyond the top? And see as a nice fit with Burrow just because he's unique in the way that he plays and building, once he builds trust with the guy, man, he could just make that guy sing. Where do you see guys here and say, man, I could see that as a real Burrow compliment?
It's also, if we're just going with a guy that maybe could replace Boyd this year and then potentially replace Higgins on the outside. So like guys for me that I like with the Bengals are ones that I think could play inside and outside. Yep. Which is also because where Jamar Chase's game is going, how much they're starting to move him around. So you don't want a guy that's maybe slot only, which then it's like, well, we can't kick him outside, yada, yada. He has the limitations there. So then you're kind of narrowing your field. So that's why Ricky Pearsall, it's like, yes, he would replace Boyd, but he never plays on the outside. So now when, if Higgins leaves, okay, now we're back to square one because we need that outside guy. The guy that comes up to me, his upside is not a Higgins, and I'll just say straight up, but his upside to me is a very good number two, is Jalen Polk from Washington, mm-hmm. who is, this is exactly where I think his kind of slot would be in this class, no pun intended. But it's like, I really see him as a, I have him graded higher as an early second rounder. I think he'll go more mid, late second round, maybe even early third. But to me, he is a Z. He can play inside. He can play outside. Roman Dunze is the top receiver from Washington, but Polk to me is like a Diet Coke version of him. Mm-hmm. Does just everything well, nothing great. Not a great athlete, more of an adequate athlete, but decent with the ball in his hands, can get some simple yards, can play from the slot, can play outside, can do dirty work. He's a better blocker than Tyler Boyd. I'll just even say it right away. He'll be a better, he's just bigger, just mm-hmm. physics. That's how it goes. But he, that's where I think he's an interesting guy. He's a good zone beater. The Bengals face a ton of zone these days. He's smart. He's a big body. He's got good hands. He's strong. Where they're picking, if they're looking at receiver there, that is like a great situation as skill set, value, all those types of things you want. So he's one to me that is a good fit if they want to replace both skill sets potentially. McCaukey's the same way. I think he's been, you know, I'll be honest, because he's a white guy, is that he's been pigeonholed as slot only. He wins from the outside. He would be ideal too, but he's going to be gone. Everyone loves him. Everybody is like exactly the same with him. Everybody I've talked to has him between like guy 28 and guy 35 on their big boards. And everyone's like, yeah, I would maybe see him sneaking into the late first. Everyone loves Ladd because he's just going to be a good pro. You could just see it. He would be ideal. Like, that's the prize to me in this range. But I think Polk is a nice consolation prize.
What one other person I specifically want to ask you about is Malachi Corley, because he's unique. You know, is he Debo Samuel, right? Everybody wants to make that comp because Yak King and the size is like almost identical and second round.
I thought Cincinnati was trying not to be Kentucky. I thought they're
exactly. Right. I don't know if he would be it, but I'm just curious what you make of him, because I mean, they've certainly looked into him. He's really interesting.
Yes.
If can he learn to play inside, intermediate, and do all that stuff that you have to be able to do, and not and take that next step from Western Kentucky to the NFL? I mean, or is that really a longer range projection?
You really have to bet that a lot has to hit, I think, to get more out of him. There's been comparisons to him, and I think Dane and I talked about this with him, was to Rasheed Rice, maybe a little smaller package of Rasheed Rice, because of all the yak stuff, all the crossers, all the stuff that they did for him to get the ball in his hands. Dane calls them runway routes, which I like. You know, give him a runway, get the ball in his hands, let him go. And Corley to me, though, is that I think college coaches, especially one like Western Kentucky, who chuck the rock all the time, they would find ways to use them differently if they could. You know, they have that in their repertoire to use all that. And I watch him. But why I'm saying that is that makes me a little concerned is could he be more? Because I feel like they would show it a little bit more. The thing is, what he is good at, getting the ball in his hands, creating yard, he is good at it. Like he's in between a gadget guy for me and a number two, number three type for me that can grow for more. He's kind of like in between. I've popped him in the third round. That's kind of where I feel safe with him, because I just do have some concerns about what else you can tap into. But the thing is, his package of traits, what he is good at, is good. It's just also the Bengals for me, it's their offense being more vertical and set based, not maybe jet sweep heavy. I know they've tried to make Chase a handoff guy for years, and it's like never worked. It
never goes well,
and they keep trying it. It's like it's the weirdest thing. He's so good with the ball in his hands. As soon as you hand it off to him, it just goes away. It's just like he's like, oh, I don't know. That's his type of role, like that I think he would have to be at. The Bengals don't use their receivers in that type of way. They might want to mold. I just said all the stuff with Bowers and all the stuff he can unlock, but Corley to me is like a round three type that. Maybe there will be some more Rams influence, but they've kind of gotten away from all that Rams type of stuff. You know, the jet sweep stuff and all that, you know, with Burrow and everything. And what, you know, they're so static and everything. He needs to be in motion.
Okay. Much thanks to Nate for joining us and talking a little bit about Brock Bowers, another, you know, the Jalen Polk thing you were talking about, Jay. But Bowers in particular, you know, I mentioned to Nate, we all know the list. Okay, we know the list. First round tight ends over the last really 15 years. It is what it is. Okay. We had Dalton Kincaid last year, Kyle Pitts, TJ Hockenson, Noah Fant, Hayden Hurst, Evan Ingram, David Njoku, OJ Howard, Eric Ebron, Tyler Eifert, Jermaine Gresham. First round tight ends. This is just, there's, it just happens every year. It's not that you don't watch Brock Bowers and be like, yes, that guy is different. This is going to change everything. He is such a great player. It's not that that's not the case. And you could see it. It's that I read you the list, man. Like, this happens over and over and over again. And I just, all of those guys, people said the same, many of the same nice things about them. The other list here I'll give you is players who were amongst the top eight graded tight ends in PFF the last 4 years, at least two times. Two of the last 4 years. George Kittle, Travis Kelce, Mark Andrews, TJ Hockenson, Dallas Goedert, Pat Freiermuth. Kittle in the fifth, Kelce in the third, Andrews in the third. Hockenson was in the first, and he was traded. Dallas Goedert in the second, Freiermuth in the second. Not the first tight ends take. I mean, this just happens. And last year, same Laporta. Same, but what if Sam Laporta? He, you know, and Kincaid was fine. Like, and that's what I'm saying, it won't necessarily work out. But like, there's just so many times that these best guys come from elsewhere and develop, that on this team that has needs at these other positions, yeah, and that what's going to be there. I just feel that just feels like a real big risk to take on a position that has this history, you know, compared to, hey, take a guy who looks like he'll really be a guy at offensive time. Or get one of the defensive tackles like Byron Murphy, who like could really be a game changer. That's a problem for me. I have a hard time getting over that.
It kind of parallels drafting a tight end in the first round is akin to making a draft day trade. That what you're getting is only half of the equation. It's also about what you're giving up. And if you take a tight end in the first round, then you're giving up a shot at a starting right tackle, a defensive tackle that you need. And you can get quality tight ends after the first round. And I just overall, that kind of feels like the philosophy, but the Bengals specifically, you're just never going to have a tight end that is going to be the focal point of this offense. I mean, it'd be great to have a guy. I mean, Brock Bowers, run him on jet sweeps. This team loves jet sweeps. Having a tight end do jet sweep stuff, you know, a lot of different things you could do with him, but it just doesn't. First of all, this whole discussion could be moot. It likely will be. I can't imagine that he's going to last till 18, but if he does get there, I mean, what would you put the percentage at that they actually pulled the trigger and got him? It almost feels, you know, Zach joked last year, he kept calling Dalton Kincaid his son-in-law. He loved him so much. But it's just, does the vision of the coaching staff fully match the scouting department, the ones making the decisions on the draft picks? I don't see this team going in that for Bowers. Any tight end in the future, who knows who comes down the pipeline. It's going to run through the wide receivers. I think he's going to be an incredible player in this league and do great things. I just don't know that if he is there, that would be the right play for this team.
Yeah. I mean, I would put it at, I just think it's, I think it's a low percentage.
Yeah.
They take almost pride in the fact that give them any group of tight ends that you've never even heard of, and they'll get production out of them in this offense. And that doesn't mean it can't change. But like I mentioned with Nate, like, you know, he feels a little redundant with Gesicki, and where, okay, you're not bringing Brock Bowers in because he's going to plant people. Okay. You're bringing him in there to play receiver. Well, I mean, Gesicki is technically still is in your tight end room right now, and he's the ultimate, like, just here to play receiver guy. So can you use them together? Can you piece, like I said, you can piecemeal, you can find ways. It just feels like a lot of work to try to make something work that hasn't traditionally worked. And again, I just feel like everybody wants to take this personal, like he's not, no, he's different. They're always different. Like, let's go read all the write-ups on all these guys that went in the first round. I mean, Bengals fans that scream from the rooftops to draft OJ Howard, right? And he goes 19th and, you know, whatever. And even somebody who was maybe a success like Eifert. I mean, the injury stuff ended up being a big part of it, but it's not, there's just, to me, so many other places you could go than that position. And think about the value. If you get a top of the line tackle, that player is worth $20 million, right? 25. We've seen what the prices these guys go for. Top of the line defensive tackle, up to $30 million. The best tight ends. I mean, the Bengals have found more value than anyone getting these dudes for $2 to $3 million that come in and put up 500, 600 yards. So that value that's an advantage for you in free agency that you have used as an advantage for you in finding free agent tight ends that want to come here, that want to play with Burrow, that are willing to do it for cheap, versus the roster value surplus that you can get from having somebody like an offensive tackle or a defensive tackle or any premium position really on a rookie deal. When you are, it is really important to be finding that value right now as the Burrow value changes. So I just think that's the other part of this. So you can have a coach who can see this and be like, oh, I could just vision it'd be so great. Well, the people that do the books and the people that look at the bigger picture are going to see it a little differently. And I think that's a part of this, a big part of this conversation when you really hash it out. But
yeah,
that's my thought. That said, I think tight end is an option for this team as you get into day three. And there's a lot of fun players, you know, when you look at who Dane has back there and some of your traitsy guys that look like they could turn into something fun, whether we're talking about Tip Ryman from Illinois or you're talking about, I know they've looked at Dallin Holker from Colorado State. They've been out there. Any of these guys that have a lot of physical traits that you like that are enticing, could be fun. We talked about Ben Snott from Kansas State a bunch. That's more to me the direction, and put that guy in that room and see what happens next than anything else. That's just kind of feels like where this goes.
Yeah, the big one for me is both of my mocks. I did it fourth round, Theo Johnson, Penn State. Mm-hmm. Dane's got him as his number three overall tight end. He's got him a third round grade on him. But that's it. It's not like you don't, like I said earlier, you're not saying we don't need a tight end, but if you draft a guy in those mid rounds and he develops into, I don't want to say Travis Kelce, but you know, someone that an upper tier tight end that you got in the fourth, then that's awesome. But spending the capital to try to get it in the first round doesn't make a lot of sense. And another guy, you mentioned all the weapons down in Texas, you know, Sanders, the tight end for down there, Jatavion Sanders. I mean, I don't know he's going to be a mid-round guy. Dane's got a second or third round grade on him, but there's a lot of it's similar to last year. It feels like there's a bloated middle with this tight end class where you could possibly get a guy that develops into something special and is your starter for years to come. Gesicki's on a 1 year deal. Sample's on three, but he is what he is. He's primarily just an inline blocker. And another one that's intriguing, and not just because he went to Fairfield High School like I did, but Eric All, who played at Michigan, then went to Iowa, Maybe just the fact playing in that incredibly awful Iowa offense is going to knock mm-hmm. him down. And he did have a knee injury too, but I think he's a guy that could be a fourth round pick that could really develop into something special.
Yeah. You've got a bunch of these late round picks. If you are thinking about where to use them, certainly makes sense to see that fourth tight end come in there that you hope maybe can develop down the line. I mean, we saw that a while back with CJ Uzomah here, you know, who came in as a project fifth round pick who'd never put his hand in the ground before. And by the time, you know, he left here, he was a big part of everything that they did and developed into a really nice player. I think that's what you're thinking. And that's what you're looking at. And they paid Drew Sample, not a little. Like they invested here in him. And to me, that's just, it signals where they're signaling to everyone. They got Gesicki to do some of the throwing. They invested in Sample to be a part of this team. They brought back Tanner Hudson as another receiving tight end and paid him. So to me, you're looking for the Drew Sample backup, the Mitch Wilcox plus, if you're looking at their signals. And that's what I think they're showing you. So pick your person who that is on day three, feels like where that comes from. All right. I know there's more. You probably have a guy, if you're listening right now, you're like, no, they didn't talk about my guy. There's too many guys. There's so many guys. We're trying to help with strategy. We're trying to help you get there. You got an RPB. You want to be going to rock an RPB here real quick before we head out?
Yeah, you want to do the one. I'm still not sure I like this one or not, but.
The skill positions?
Yeah. Try. How many skill position guys, running back, tight end, wide receiver, will the Bengals draft? In this draft, and they've got 10 picks. So I had 0 to 2, 3, or 4 plus.
Okay. I'm going to run with 3. I think one of each.
Okay.
One receiver. The wild card is they got all these extras. They got all these extras, the 4 picks in the last 2 rounds where that could really be anything. But I think they'll plug linebacker. I think it's where the tight end. I just, that could be a weird random double up, you know, throw in the special team savvy 7th round receiver. You know, James Wright was in there. You've had guys over the years that show up and you're like, oh man. So I you could see one of those be extras, but I'll run with 3 and then I'll pass on 4 plus, because I think there's a chance of that at the end, and I'll boot 0 to 2. I mean, I think it would be stunning if they didn't have at least one of each of these 3 positions to me. With 10 picks?
Yeah. And,
I mean, the spot's open.
I mean, I'd flip it. I'd put 4 plus as my run and then pass on 3. Just the volume there, that you've got much more chances instead of getting exactly 3. But I do feel like a double up at wide receiver is coming. Whether it's just 2 pure receivers, or as you mentioned, the new kickoff rule, they're going to be looking for guys that can be explosive returners as well. There's a lot of receivers in this class that have return experience. And I mean, maybe another run passer boot is, how many positions do they double up on? Because I don't think it's just going to be one. You could see 2 defensive tackles, 2 wide receivers, maybe 2 tight end. I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of different directions they could go for. They do like the double ups, but I do. I think it'll be, you know, at least 4, and then I'll pass on 3, and I'll boot 0 to 2 as well.
All right. Plenty more to, you know, to digest. Jay, I know you've got all kinds of stuff up on Pro Football Network. I've got a receiver story coming out to go even more into some of this. So if you didn't hear about your guy, I bet you I write about your guy coming up here soon. So you can make sure you get that. Also, Houday Light is coming up on Friday. So make sure you send your questions in that you want to answer. Mark will take care of it. Whether you want to ambush me with something about the history of Catholic saints, or we can actually have a Bengals question. Happy to do all of that. Send your questions to thegrowlerpodcast@gmail.com. And we'll dive into those with you on Friday's show as we get even more deeper into draft season. And then next week, next week we'll do trenches. We'll talk about these offensive linemen. We'll talk about these defensive tackles and all this stuff that's coming up inside for the Bengals in this draft. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Have a good one.